My Music. A panel game devised by Tony Schrein and Edward J. Mason. Chairman, Steve Race.
Hello. Here at the Westminster Theatre is an expectant audience, or some of them look as though they may be, anyway. And facing them are customary foursome John Amis, Frank Muir, Ian Wallace, and Dennis Norton. And I turn first to John Amis, as I always seem to do. John, this music comes from Morning, Noon, and Night in Vienna by Suppé. Who, John, was Suppé's uncle?
Campbell.
A nice, nice thought. It's somebody you know, though you may not know he was Suppé's uncle.
Yeah, the awful thing is that I did know it was Suppé's uncle, but I can't remember now. Bang, I've all gone those thoughts about when he plays me a bit of music and he tells me the title of the composer and the engine driver's name, and I start thinking, is it in 11-4, or are the three piccolos playing?
Yes, I know. You know what the sort of question you're going to get.
It's somebody literary, isn't it?
Well, he wrote He composed 70 stage works, and he wrote a lot for a prima donna named Pasta. It's a rather nice name for a large lady.
Was his name Spaghetti? Wait a minute, he was Italian, wasn't he?
Yes. He lived from 1797 to 1848. I'm going to have to tell you, it was Donizetti. Donizetti was Suppé's uncle. That's the truth.
Frank and I have an awful joke about Donizetti, which we can never tell on the air. But send your inquiries on postcards, please.
Frank, you're going to hear two voices in a song by Harry Parr Davis from the 1937 Jesse Matthews film.
A table for care I be, coming down the street. It's hurry, hurry, hurry to the end of the day.
So,
they're all very good.
Who are the singers? Can you tell me the singers' names and the name of the village they're supposed to live in? One of them.
Yes. It's Hinge and Bracket.
That's right, it's Hinge and Bracket. What's their village called?
It's in Berkshire, Dragshot.
You've got Hinge and Bracket.
Apart from that, I hope very, can't help you.
Very like, yes. The village is called... Anybody in the audience know? Thank you.
Everybody in the
Stacton audience. Trestle, that's right. But he gets the mark, doesn't he? Just the same.
I always get them mixed up with Starsky and Hutch.
Not a lot, but a bit, yes. Ian, some splendid singing. Montserrat Caballé as Lucia. Music by Donizetti. Who was his nephew, Ian?
I was listening to that and I was saying, he's told me the name of the singer, he's told me the character and the opera. What could the question possibly be? Well, if I heard aright earlier on, it's Heinz Suppé.
Even better. Yes, Suppé was right. Who, just to get us straight, Ian, Lucia de Lammermoor, who wrote the book of the play, of the story, of the film, of the opera?
Sir Walter Scott.
Thank you, yes, that's right. Dennis, let me read to you an entry from the, I think, marvellously readable diary of Barbara Pym. She wrote at one point, "Watched Top of the Pops, sad Bach-like tune, to see it a kind of nightmare. A dark, brooding youth playing the organ and the vocal sung by a man in full Chinese dress. Decadent and horrible. Can you name the group and the record, Dennis?
No.
Well, then, we'll give you a little hint on in the musical terms. Here it is.
Strange, because when she wrote that and thought it was decadent and horrible, they're almost bucolic by the side of what she would have been looking at today in Top of the Pops.
Indeed, yes.
That's the guy I rather like there.
Yes, most people did.
They had that strangely Latinate name, Procol Harum.
That's right.
Which I think means, please don't write and correct me if I'm wrong, but John will, isn't it mean far away from these things? Procol, I remember as being distant or far away.
Latin.
Do you know the name of the piece?
That was A Whiter Shade of Pale.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And everybody's going to write and ask me which Bach piece it comes from, and it doesn't. It was, as far as I'm aware, completely...
I was going to ask that.
Because of the descending bass, everybody thinks it's the air on the G string.
Yes, that's right. Three notes. John, somebody's Seventh Symphony virtually starts with those three notes. Whose? Second is a horn. Don't play that on. You don't know.
No.
Mahler. Mahler's Seventh.
That's it, really?
The symphony people don't think much about. Mahler's Seventh Symphony, yes. Frank, the same three notes epitomizing a jolly fellow who came to a bad end. Who's he?
I don't know.
Yes, tell me, John, could you do this one?
I'm not all that interested, but...
Yes.
Till.
Oh.
Till.
Till.
Yeah. Eulenspiegel.
Till Eulenspiegel.
Till Eulenspiegel of the Merry Pranks fame, yes. Ian, into the key of D major, but with the same three notes, relatively speaking.
Oh, that's, a Hungarian dance.
Yes, that's right. Number six, by?
Brahms.
Brahms, yes, Brahms, exactly. Dennis, those three notes found fame in a film. And so on.
Ah, oh, that was a nice film, yes. That was intermezzo. Didn't it have a lyric? Like the dream.
Yes, dream. A subsequent lyric, might say, yes. It was music written by Heinz Provost for the film...
Intermezzo. For the film Escape to Happiness.
Yes, that's right. And the two big stars...
Well, Ingrid Bergman and Leslie Howard,
in that order, for us. All these are quintets. John, Clara Schumann wrote in her diary, "It is profound and intimate, sensitive, warm, simple." She just heard this for the first time, and how right she was.
The equivalent of the clarinet sound is a clear gum.
Clear gum?
Yes. It's exactly to me like the tactile taste of a clear gum in the mouth.
Yes, so woody, though, isn't it? Anyway, what's the piece, John?
Oh, the piece is the clarinet quintet by Brahms.
That's right.
B minor, opus 115. Yes.
And can we have a date for it?
Ooh.
And preferably the flavour of the clear gum.
It's a mauve one.
No, I think it's one of the black ones. Those are the ones I would like the best. Well, the old boy died in 1897.
Yes.
It's fairly late, so I should venture about 1893.
Born in the same year as Sherlock Holmes, Tess and Dorian Gray, I noticed. 1891. Jolly near. Jolly near. Well done. As I said, this round of questions is about quintets. Which quintet is this, Frank? And I shall be watching your face to see realization dawn.
Ah, ben je veux bien, alors on vous dit quand c'est chaud. Alors, un, deux.
Yes.
Come on, voilà.
Which quintets are?
The Quintet de Haute Club de France.
Yes. Can you name two of its members, please?
Yes. The three-fingered guitarist, Django Reinhardt,
yes,
and his brother.
Oh, super. Yes, Josef, his brother.
Josef and Stefan Grappelli.
Yes, Stefan Grappelli. In the days of those records, spelt his name with a Y, then changed it to end with an I for reasons of numerology or something. Two musicians did this. Stefan was one. And the other was a jazz trombonist called George Brunis, I-E-S, who changed his name to Brunis, I-S.
Is there anybody who's added such a personal sound, such a personal technique of the violin?
To the
Stefan
violin.
Grappelli,
Well,
quite individual.
Joe Venuti, really, before him, but not for very long. Because, I mean, Joe Venuti was recording from about 1926 or something.
Years,
yes, and by 37, of course, Stefan was well known.
Funny how seldom that they are used to represent their era. Mm-hmm. You know the way that they bring in Paul Whiteman and so on to represent an era. Yes. And yet they tell you the era immediately you hear that sound. Mm-hmm.
Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely, yes. The quintet of the Hot Club of France, Stefan Grappelli, Django Reinhardt and the rest of them. Ian, there's a quintet coming up, though in fact you only hear two voices. Rather inhibited singing from one of them.
Der Arme kann wohl Sprache sagen, denn seine Sprache ist das Lied. Ich kann nicht tun, als ich beklagen, weil ich zu schwach zu helfen bin. Ich kann nicht tun, als ich beklagen, weil ich zu schwach zu.
One is somewhat shocked at Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau not opening his mouth properly when he sings. Why?
Well, if you want to be successful as a singer, don't tell lies about killing dragons.
Right. Well done, yes.
This is he's singing the part of Papageno in The Magic Flute, and the quintet is with him, Tamino, the tenor, and later three ladies.
Padlocks is the point, isn't it?
Papageno, yes. Oh, not Fischer-Dieskau. Papageno. And the Queen of the Night, therefore, had a padlock put on his lips as a punishment. And very fortunately for him and for the audience, for the rest of the opera, she relents very soon and takes it off. And we then hear him in his pristine form.
Absolutely true. True. Dennis, following all those music hall songs about food, you know, boiled beef and carrots, a little bit of cucumber and so on, a certain much more recent quintet gave the world this.
I'm going to feed round my vegetables. I'm going to chow down my vegetables. I love you most of all, my favorite vegetable.
The group's name, Dennis, and a couple of its members, perhaps.
I doubt whether Clara Schumann wrote much about them in her diary. whoever they were. I really don't know. I don't know the song.
No, she didn't say they were profound and intimate, sensitive, warm and simple. Anybody
That's
in the audience,
quintet,
tell us, please.
It?
You know who they were?
Good, good. Nobody. Nobody. That's very good.
Yeah. They were the Beach Boys. Their famous recordings. We won't bother about the names.
No.
Back to music. There are unforgettable nights from time to time in the musical theatre. Unforgettable big shows. And unforgettable small shows. And lots of other shows in between. A show never to be forgotten. For me, an evening with Beatrice Lilly at the theatre on Shaftesbury Avenue. Peter Grimes in the composer's own presence at Covent Garden. Lots of those great occasions. Musical comedy, opera, variety, one-man shows. Can I have your nomination for a theatrical experience never to be forgotten? Not the greatest, just one that comes to mind, John.
Well, one that does come to mind is one you mentioned, Peter Grimes, but not at Covent Garden, but on the first night on June or whatever it was, 1945. That was a great thing because no opera, no English opera had really held the stage until that time. And then we felt that everything, you know, was really going for Benjamin Britten and that, you know, something was really going to happen.
Yes. A new dawn. Yes,
yes. It was true. Yes. And even you know, the whole of London got round to it. The bus driver on the 19 would say, "Here we are, Satis Wells, any more for Peter Grimes, the sadistic fisherman?"
But yes, the performance I mentioned was a good deal later, in fact, not long before Lord Britten died.
I can even remember about that night the number of the ticket. I sat in A1.
Yes.
In the stalls.
Yes, lovely, yes. Frank, an unforgettable musical event.
Not particularly musical, but I think the unforgettable one for me was my first visit to the theatre, I suppose at the age of about six, the Theatre Royal Ramsgate, and it was Cinderella. And they were in the kitchen, and Cinderella was there, and Buttons, and the Broker's Men, and there was this huge dresser, sir, and it was covered with plates and cups and things, and the Broker's Men started climbing up, sir, and they were pulling, and the thing was going to fall off, and Cinderella had a hand in her mouth, and was saying, "No, no," and we all shouted, "Careful," and the thing went, and wallop, sir, and all the blazing clothes, and all brushing, terrific, terrific.
Steady on, Muir.
Brilliant. I remember it clearly.
Yes, indeed.
Did anything break?
Everything broke.
Ian, just one unforgettable musical.
Well, it's really a theatre occasion, but there was a musical moment in it which was tremendously highlighted just because it came in the middle of what was certainly, I think, the greatest theatrical experience I've ever had, and that was going to see Nicholas Nickleby. The Royal Shakespeare Company epic, which was a marvellous thing. And there were several musical moments apart from the incidental music. And there was this splendid moment when the actor John Woodvine, playing the part of Ralph Nickleby, suddenly produced from the drawer of his desk two ruffles for his cuffs. And he was... had an 18th century jacket on, and from being this wicked 19th century uncle of Nicholas, suddenly becomes an 18th century operatic character and sang a Mozart-style aria with enormous authority and all the operatic conventions completely right and jolly good singing as well, and then just took these ruffles off and everything, put them back in his drawer and resumed his character.
Terrific.
I thought that was a great Terrific. Musical, theatrical moment.
Yes, indeed, yes. All the more wonderful for being so surprising.
Mm.
Dennis?
Well, you said a small show. I suppose it was a small show. It was only comparatively successful. It was a show called The Thurber Carnival.
Yes, I saw it on Broadway.
And
Broadway,
well, now, did you see... Yeah. Tom Yule play the part, and when he did the number or the item based on Thurber's The Last Flower, I mean, while deafening applause is exciting, total stillness is what sets the hairs on the back of your neck prickly, and that whole audience sat, as it were, they were one heart for just that moment of stillness. And that's an unforgettable moment.
Well, you never came here, did it?
It did come here, yes.
Briefly, though.
Yeah, briefly.
Question. Do they know which songs they're going to sing? Answer, yes, they do, because they chose them. Do they know the answers to your questions? No, they don't. Nor do I sometimes. So here are four self-chosen closing songs, with Frank's choice first. Yes, My Darling Daughter.
Right.
My
mother, may I go out dancing? Yes, my darling daughter. Mother, may I try romancing? Yes, my darling daughter. But if there's a moon, mummy darling, and it's shining on the water, mother, must I keep on dancing? Yes, my darling daughter. What if he proposed, mummy darling, when the night is getting shorter? Mother, what should be my answer? Yes, 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 my daughter.
What did Ponchielli write? And the instant answer is the Dance of the Hours. John, pucker up and fly right, okay?
Your G tooth needed tuning.
It was very sweet, that was. The songwriter Arthur Schwartz was a lovely, gentle man with a huge talent as a composer. Jack Hulbert was the star, 1929 this was, of a show which featured an Arthur Schwartz song, revived now by Dennis.
Her disposition is so sweet. She kind of sweeps you off your feet. Shy, unobtrusive, demure and elusive. She's such a comfort to me. I love the donuts that she bakes. I love the dough her father makes. His only daughter, he's bound to support her. That's such a comfort to me. If I crack a joke on Monday, she won't leave me in the lurch. 6 days later on the Sunday, she laughs out loud in church. I used to see her every day, but even when she went away, I never missed her, 'cause she's got a sister and she's quite a comfort to me.
Ian's song is by another great American songwriter, Johnny Mercer. Music by Johnny Mandel. It's a charming little song in praise of Emily. And I can't resist just a half chorus for myself first.
Emily has the memory darling song of May. All silver bells, coral shells, carousels, Emily, and we paint to a marvelous view, two lovers alone and out of sight, seeing images in the firelight, as my eyes visualize a family, they see dreamily Emily too.
In case anyone's wondering, the quiz part resulted in the victory this week for Ian Wallace and Dennis Norton. Goodbye. Taking part in My Music were John Amos, Frank Muir, Ian Wallace and Dennis Norton. The chairman was Steve Race. The questions were compiled by Steve Race, and the program was produced by Pete Atkins.